Page 487. Assuming that such a creature could think theoretically, I do not think it would say what Russell claims it would. Instead, it would say that Russell had completely misinterpreted both psychoanalysis and Marxism, that psychoanalysis actually investigates the adaptation of biological factors, the instincts, to social reality, and that Marxism is not a psychological theory at all. Russell is not the only one to misconstrue the two theories. He is joined by many other theoreticians, and his false views is matched by many similar ones. The notion of historical materialism being an economistic psychology is espoused by Henrik de Man with special emphasis. As we know, Marx himself never formulated his theory of human motivation. As a matter of fact, he never explained what class meant. Death cut short his last work, but he was turning to this subject. But the basic conceptions from which he starts are not in doubt, even undefined by tacit presupposition underlying his work appears both in his scholarly and political activity. Every economic thesis and every political opinion of Marx rests on the presupposition that man's volitional motives which bring about social progress are dictated first and foremost by economic interests. Present-day social psychology would express the same thoughts in terms of the effect of the acquisitive drive on social conduct. If Marx himself regarded such formulations as superfluous, that is because he took it for granted that this was the object and aim of contemporary political economy. Footnote 14, text. Now, this tacit presupposition may well have been the self-understood conception of all contemporary, that is, bourgeois economists, but it certainly was not the view of Marx himself, who did not share the views of contemporary theoreticians on many points. So, in less explicit way, Bernstein is not far from this psychologistic interpretation when he tries to defend the honor of historical materialism with this observation. The economic interpretation of history need not mean that only economic forces and motives are to be recognized, but simply that economics is always the decisive factor that serves as the cornerstone for the great movements of history. Footnote 15, text. Behind these muddy formulations lie the motion that Marxism is an economic psychology which is purified and improved by Bernstein in an idealist sense. Footnote 16, text. Page 488. The idea that the acquisitive drive is the basic or only motive of human behavior is the brainchild of bourgeois liberalism, used as a psychological argument against the possibility of the realization of socialism. Footnote 17, text. Max Petit, bourgeois interpreters, interpreted this theory as an economistic psychology. In reality, historical materialism is far from being a psychological theory. Its psychological presuppositions are few and may be briefly listed. Men make their own history, needs motivate men's action and feeling, hunger and love. Footnote 18, text. These needs increase in the course of historical development, thereby spurring increased economic activity. Footnote 19, text. In connection with psychology, the economic factor plays a role in historical materialism only to the extent that human needs, primarily the need for self-preservation, are largely satisfied through the production of goods. In short, needs are the level that stimulates production. Marx and Engels certainly stressed that the drive toward self-preservation took priority over all other needs, but they did not go into any detail about the quality of various drives and needs. Footnote 20, text. However, they never maintained that the acquisitive drive, the passion for acquisition as an aim in itself, as the only or essential need. To proclaim it a universal human drive would be naively to absolutize a psychic trait that has taken an uncommon force in capitalist society. Marx and Engels are the last people to whom one would impute the idea of transfiguring bourgeois and capitalist traits into a universal human trait. They were well aware of the place psychology had within sociology, but they never were nor wanted to be psychologists. Moreover, apart from indications in the French Enlightenment literature, especially Helvetius, which should not, of course, be underestimated, they had no scientific materialist psychologies at their disposal. Psychoanalysis was the first to provide this psychology and showed that the acquisitive drive, also important, did not play a predominant role in men's psychic armament by comparison with other genital, sadistic, narcissistic needs. Psychoanalysis, in fact, indicates that in large measure the acquisitive drive is not the deepest cause of the needs to acquire or possess things. It is rather the expression of a narcissistic need or wish to win recognition from oneself and others. In a society that pays the highest recognition and admiration to the rich man, the narcissistic impulses will find expression as a drive to contribute to society in some important way. Since narcissistic needs are among the most elemental and powerful psychic strivings, it is most important to recognize that the goals, hence the concrete content of these narcissistic aspirations, depend on the specific structure of a society. Page 489. The imposing role of the acquisitive drive then is largely due to the especially high valuation of property in bourgeois society. When the materialistic view of history talks about economic causes apart from the meaning we have just explained, it is not talking about economics as the subjective psychological motive, but as an objective influence on men's activity in life. Footnote 21, text. All man's activity, the satisfying of all his needs, depend on the specific nature of natural economic conditions around, and it is these conditions that determine how man shall live his life. For Marx, man's consciousness is to be explained in terms of his existence in society, in terms of his real earthly life that is conditioned by the state of his productive capabilities. The production of ideas, conceptions, and consciousness is directly interwoven with the material activity and the material activity of men. It is an expression of his real life. His thoughts and intellectual ideas are seen to be the direct outflow of his material activity. The same holds true for the intellectual production that finds expression in politics, law, morality, religion, metaphysics, and others. Men are the producers of their conception and ideas, but we are talking about real, concrete men who are conditioned by the specific way in which their productive capabilities and their corresponding intercourse develops. Consciousness can never be anything but conscious being, and man's being is his concrete life. Footnote 22, text. Historical materialism sees history as the process of man's active and passive adaptation to the natural conditions around him. Work is, first and foremost, a progress between man and nature, a progress in which man mediates, regulates, and controls his interaction with nature through his own actions. Vis-à-vis the natural elements themselves, he is a natural force. Footnote 23, text. Man and nature are the two poles here, interacting with each other, conditioning each other, and altering each other. The historical process is always bound up with man's own nature and natural conditions outside man. Also, Marx stressed the fact that man's greatly altered both himself and nature in the historical process. He always emphasized that all such changes are tied up with the existing natural conditions. This is precisely what distinguishes his standpoint from certain idealist positions that accord unlimited power to the human will. Footnote 24, text. Page 490. As Marx and Engels said, the presuppositions with which we begin are not arbitrary dogmas. They are real presuppositions from which one can abstract only in imagination. They involve real living individuals, their actions, and their material living conditions, which they find or have created. Thus, these presuppositions are verifiable in a purely empirical way. The first presupposition of human history is, of course, the existence of living human individuals. So the first fact to be verified is the physical organization of these individuals and the resultant relationship between them and nature. Here we cannot go into the physical nature of man nor the varied geological, climatic, and so on. Natural conditions he finds around him. Every description of history must start with these natural foundations and their modification in the course of history by man's activity. Footnote 25, text. After the correction of the most drastic misunderstandings, what emerges as the relation between psychoanalysis and historical materialism? Psychoanalysis can enrich the overall conception of historical materialism on one specific point. It can provide a more comprehensive knowledge of one of the factors that is operative in the social process, the nature of man himself. It locates man's instinctual apparatus among the natural factors that modify the social process. Also, there are also limits to this modifiability. Man's instinctual apparatus is one of the natural conditions that form part of the substructure, Unterbau, of the social process. But we are not talking about the instinctual apparatus in general or in some pristine biological form, since it is only manifest in some specific form that had been modified through the social process. The human psyche or the libidinal forces at its root are part of the substructure, but they are not the whole substructure. As a psychologistic interpretation would have it, the human psyche always remains a psyche that has been modified by the social process. Historical materialism calls for a psychology that is a science of man's psychic structure, and psychoanalysis is the first discipline to provide a psychology that historical materialism can really use. The contribution of psychoanalysis is particularly important for the following reasons. Marx and Engels postulated the dependence of all ideological processes on the economic substructure. They saw intellectual and psychic creations as the material basis reflecting in man's head. In many instances, to be sure, historical materialism could provide the right answers without any psychological presuppositions. Page 491. But only where ideology was the immediate expression of economic interests, or where one was trying to establish the correlation between economic substructure and ideological superstructure. Lacking a satisfactory psychology, Marx and Engels could not explain how the material basis was reflected in men's head and heart. Psychoanalysis can show that men's ideologies are the products of certain vicious instinctual drives interests and needs which themselves in large measure unconsciously find expression in rationalization that is as ideologies. Psychoanalysis can show that while their instincts, their quantity and content are greatly affected by the individual socio-economic situation or class, Marx says that men are the producers of their ideologies. Analytical social psychology can describe empirical the process of the production of ideology, of the interaction of nature and social factors. Hence, psychoanalysis can show how the economic situation is transformed into ideology.